Welcome back to Sports Talk here on the Big 870 WWL. Mike DeTillo along with Charlie Long. Want to tell everybody a little after 520, we'll have on with us our NFL Odyssey expert himself, Mark Slareff. You can hear him and watch him on the NFL on Fox, and we'll talk about the NFL, Saints, Giants, and what a crazy game playing against the Chargers. I said this yesterday. I don't think I've ever seen this on a Jim Harbaugh coach team. They threw the football 41 times, the Chargers did, and ran it 13 against a team that I think they 28th in the league in stopping a run.
They're bottom five, Mike. I had that in the flash. 153 rushing yards allowed per game, and they played right into what the Giants want to do. I think that if you're Kellen Moore and you're game planning for this Giants offense or defense, the last thing that you want to do is have Spencer Rattler throw it 30-plus times. You want to be able to run the football as much as possible in this game, because that is where like the underbelly of this Giants defense is a little bit softer. But if you get into those really, you know, obvious passing downs where you have all those studs on the defensive front with Abdul Carter and Kayvon Thibodeau and Dexter Lawrence at the nose tackle spot, like they can get after you and then passing down. So, you know, Coach Moore knows about that, and he's not going to really want to set Spencer Rattler up for failure that way.
Charlie, I got coaches in my family, and I got to clean this up. But they would always say, sometimes you come up with a game plan that you want to throw in the toilet. And that would have been one of them offensively. That who in God's name would have thought that against a team that couldn't stop the run, you only run the ball 13 times? That doesn't make any sense to me at all, because they play sick'em ball. And we'll talk to Mark about the strength of the Giants, and certainly it's their defensive front. Man, they got guys there that can get after you. So you know what? You wear them out. You run the football against the Giants. Want to tell everybody, too, at 7 o'clock tonight right here on the Big 870 WWL, it's the Saints Hour with Mike Haas. Mike will be interviewing Saints Senior Vice President, Assistant General Manager Jeff Ireland. Jeff is the guy that does the evaluation of all the college players coming into the NFL draft, and also a young man he evaluated, and he hit right on this one, Jonas Sanker. That young man got some talent, and he is one of the building blocks for the future for the New Orleans Saints. So he'll have on with him Jeff Ireland and also Jonas Sanker, who had an outstanding game against the Buffalo Bills. Charlie, I want to ask you this last night. Didn't get a chance to. Who would you vote for MVP? Aaron Judge, Cal Raleigh.
So this is going to sound like my Astros bias against Raleigh and the Mariners. It's Judge. I mean, yes, 60 home runs to Raleigh. Congratulations on a historic offensive season as a catcher. But if you look up and down the line, Mike, and I don't have it right in front of me, as far as offensive stats total, Judge blows him out the water. Listen, I sound like a hater. I really do. And it's not really meant to sound like that, because I got to go get the stats and kind of defend my point here, because 60 home runs is unbelievable. Don't get me wrong.
For a catcher.
Yes.
Or for any player, but playing catcher, we talked about it at the All-Star break. Could he keep that pace up? And he actually did. That's remarkable. I agree with you, Charlie. I would cast my vote for Aaron Judge.
It's just the numbers are more consistent for Judge across the board. Like, as far as a power-hitting season, it's one of the best that we've ever seen from Raleigh. But at the same time, if you're talking about the best player in the American League, it's Aaron Judge, in my opinion.
I agree with you totally. Bob and I were going to talk about that last night, and then we got sort of sidetracked on other things. But I agree with you. I think the numbers showed up. Now, a lot of people kind of point that finger. What has he done in the postseason? How is Aaron Judge? But, you know, I don't know how much that comes into play, Charlie, to be honest with you. I don't know how much of that, from a voting standpoint, will come into play.
So the thing about Judge that's fascinating, Mike, is, as you mentioned, he goes from being a Hall of Fame regular season hitter to a below average postseason hitter.
Yep.
ESPN had this stat as soon as they were promoting, because it's a great matchup on the mound. Again, we talked about how the first two games of the day were great pitching duels for the Tigers and the Guardians, and then later on in the afternoon, the Cubs and the Padres. This is another one with Garrett Crochet for the Red Sox, who's going to finish top five in Cy Young voting, and then Max Fried of the Yankees, who very well might also finish top five in Cy Young voting of the American League. So it's another great pitching matchup, but here's the stat. that was thrown out there as well. His career playoff average for Aaron Judge is 205.
Yow.
Just think about that. This is a guy that consistently hits over 300 season after season after season. 205 when it comes to playoff baseball.
And you the batting champ?
He turns into a pumpkin almost. Yeah. It's really unbelievable. But so I got those numbers in front of me as well, Mike, as far as Judge versus Raleigh.
The other thing too, Charlie, is as I'm saying it, I just turned my head and he moves a runner from first to second and he gets a single in his first bat.
Well, there you
against
go.
The Red Sox.
Yeah, I think so, my TV
he might have been hearing, hey, what's all this about? I'm not good in the postseason. So Aaron Judge, first up to plate, and he gets a single. So the Yankees have runners on first and second with no outs early on against the Red Sox. One of the things, too, last night you saw was Bo Nix. With Denver, really, really played well last night. You know, because he's had some up and down moments, but I thought he was focused in, really keyed up well. And the Bengals are bad on defense. I guess we all know that. And all this crap all about next man up don't apply when it's Joe Burrow. And it don't apply to anybody, but especially that man. Do the Bengals miss not having Burrow in the lineup? Because at times you could see Ja'Marr Chase was open, T. Higgins was open. He can't get him the football. Can't get him the football.
Mike, there was one moment of last night's game, and I'm gonna get the exact time about it here in just a second. But the Broncos dominated the Bengals.
Oh,
you're in the fourth quarter. You're down 28-3. It was the final drive of the game. So there's like 3 minutes left to go, and you're at fourth and three near midfield, and Zach Taylor just punts. And I get the game is over. I understand. But at the same time, that is one of the most white flag moments that you've seen so far in this NFL season. They got smoked start to finish by a Denver Broncos team that looked less than stellar in the first 3 weeks. And the Bengals, who got off to that 2-0 start, finally got over their week one and two blues. They lose Joe Burrow, and then all of a sudden it feels like their season's done. In September, Mike, it's real unfortunate for Bengals fans.
And I got a feeling Taylor is going to be the one to walk the plank.
Maybe so.
At the end of the year, he's gonna do it. We come back. We'll have our Odyssey NFL insider, Mark Schlereff, host of the Stinkin' Truth podcast, on with us to talk Saints NFL right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL, Mike DeTellier along with Charlie Long, and on our call line, we're joined by Odyssey NFL insider Mark Schlereff, host of the Stinkin' Truth podcast. Listen to the Stinkin' Truth podcast now on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Insider calls are brought to you by Nationwide. For your insurance and financial needs, Nationwide is on your side. Mark, how's the podcast going?
The podcast is going well, man. I appreciate it. Have a hilarious one on today. Great football stuff, but really ridiculous. So you're going to want to watch it. Check it out on YouTube as well. It is on there at the Stinkin' Truth. But I guarantee you'll be educated and fully entertained. But don't tell my wife. I can't have her listening to it because I said some things today. She's over there on the couch. I said some things today that will have me on the couch if she actually heard it. So, guy code. Hey, this is between us. In New Orleans, you and I, right now,
gotcha.
Don't break guy code. Do not share this with the boss of me because it'll get me in trouble.
Mark, been there, done that already. So, I get you 100%. Man, you'd like watching the Saints play this weekend. They ran the football. Now, Buffalo Bills are El Stinko. Stopping the run. Every team they've played this year has kind of pounded it at them. But the Saints did it too, and I think maybe for the first time in the Kellen Moore time frame here, which is short, they showed an identity that I think Kellen Moore will continue to work with in running the football and with Alvin Kamara, Kendra Miller, and they, you know, when you average 5.6 yards a carry, Mark, you're doing your job. And, okay, it's not because you got some fans throwing the ball all over the field. Okay, you get your quarterback beat up and knocked it tomorrow doing that. You know how you get an opportunity is by controlling the tempo of a game and running it. And for the first time in the Kellen Moore time frame, we saw it against the Bills.
Yeah, and they were tied. That game was tied all the way through until the fourth quarter, you know. I mean, it was a good tight game. So, yeah, there's, you know, you look at it, man, there's a formula there. There's a formula for winning. And especially when, let's face it, man, you still are in the just in the talent procurement phase of the organization, right? You got to get more talented. And that's, hey, man, that's just part of the deal, right? That's part of the deal. Right. It's a cyclical nature of football. And, you know, you've got some great years and you have some down years and you got to figure it out. So, but that's a great way to be able to compete, great way to be able to continue to fight, and a great way to support, you know, young quarterbacks who don't have a lot of experience and give them the best chance to win. Here's what I love about what the Saints did. It doesn't just feel to me like Kellen Moore, you know, is doing what a lot of teams or a lot of people out there, a lot of fans are like, hey, we got to, you know, we just got to tank so we can get a good college quarterback. Like, let me just tell you this. You don't know which ones are going to be good. You don't know which ones. Everybody said that Caleb Williams was a generational talent. How has he looked so far? And it hasn't been very good. And I understand that it's still young, right? It's still very early in his career, but you just don't know. You don't know. And so ultimately, to me, the best thing you do is fight, continue to try to learn how to win, because that to me is far more important, learning how to win and developing that culture of accountability. And those things are far more important to me than, boy, we're going to go after this college kid that we have no idea whether he's going to be good at this level or not.
Mark, in a strange game, because of the fact the Saints this coming Sunday play the Giants, I have no idea what the Chargers were doing in that game when they run the football only 13 times against a team that's 28th against the run in the NFL, and you throw it 41 times. But I want to have your kind of talk about that, because sometimes game plans, man, you got to throw them away. It's just a bad game plan all the way across the board. But secondly, you look at that Giants team and where they're really good, it's the defensive line. Yeah. So your comments on Dexter Lawrence, Brian Burns, man, you see Abdul Carter making an impact now as an edge rusher. We saw what he did at Penn State. But, man, if I'm the Saints, I see that film. I got to run the football against the Giants. But your thoughts on a team that's not good against the run, what you trying to do, trick them? And your thoughts on Big Dexter Lawrence and Brian Burns and that crew the Giants have?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I did Carolina, and you think about Carolina. I mean, they had two first-rounders for Brian Burns. They turned it down, and a year, I think it was a year later, they traded him for a second-rounder, and that guy's a legitimate big-time pass rusher. So, I just like, you know, they were complaining about, oh, we don't have a franchise quarterback. Well, you had both Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnold in your building, and both of those guys are excelling right now, so maybe it's just the franchise. But listen, man, Brian Burns is flat-out rushing the passer. Thibodeau is rushing the passer. You talked about Abdul Carter rushing the passer, and Sexy Dexy, man, is that dude is a beast on the inside. So the strength of that football team is that front seven, is that defensive line, is their ability to put pressure on your quarterback. And it was such a non Jim Harbaugh situation. You know, it almost feels like, hey, we're gonna get, you know, we know they're going to try to stop our run game, so let's throw it over the top of them, and then we'll get back to it. And then all of a sudden, you get into a game where you don't get back to it. Nothing seems to be working. They stop you a couple times, and then, you know, the next thing you knew, you look at a couple possessions, you say, hey, man, you know, we throw a pick here. Dexy almost takes one for a touchdown, you know, and then you're like, oh, you completely get out of the game plan. And it just – it happens occasionally – but I'm surprised it happened, because, you know, the one thing we know about the Giants is they can flat get after your quarterback. And then they had a, you know, a rookie quarterback who only threw for 100 yards. But I'm telling you what, and I believe it, Jackson Dart, man, brought a ton of energy. And his ability to make it 11-on-11 football when it comes to running the ball. And, you know, the first touchdown was a designed QB draw. And you just saw, like, you saw Brian Daboll just hugging and like the excitement and also the connection that he had with his young quarterback. It just looked like a different football team. And one of your guys, one of your LSU guys, Malik Nabers, tears his ACL. Terrible. Have you seen, by the way, have you seen how many torn ACLs have happened at MetLife Stadium over the last, you know, three seasons or so?
Mark, I mean, since 2014, the Giants have used either a first or second round pick on a receiver or a tight end. Six of those sevens have torn up that ACL on MetLife.
Yeah, I mean, I would, like, if I am them, I'm looking at what is going on there, why this happens, and we got to, you know, we got to change the turf, we got to change the field. You know, I don't know what it is, but, man, that's unacceptable.
Insider Calls with Mark Slareff are brought to you by Nationwide for your insurance and financial needs. Nationwide is on your side. Your thoughts are on a tie game in the NFL. To me, okay, we shouldn't see that. And it was an entertaining game, certainly between the Cowboys and the Packers. And it goes to show how bad the secondary is for the Packers, because if you can block Micah and Rashawn Gary, they're vulnerable at the cornerback position. And, man, how much more could you ask for Dak Prescott to do for the Cowboys? I think he's having a tremendous season, but, you know, their defense isn't very good either. But your thoughts on the tie situation in the NFL? I don't think you should ever have a tie in the NFL.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's the fans' fault, right?
Yeah.
I mean, because you guys – I mean, it's your fault. It's not my fault. It's the people listening right now. It's your fault. So just accept it. Because you know what? Josh Allen didn't get to touch the ball in an overtime scenario. And they're like, oh, it's not fair. Right? Listen, did any of your parents parent you? Didn't your parents tell you, hey, man, life ain't fair?
That's
it
right.
It's fair. Sudden death is awesome. I talk about it on the Stink of Truth podcast today. Sudden death is incredible, right? It's great. And you guys are so soft. You know, I sat in a lot of meeting rooms for 12 years where we talked about, hey, man, it's three phases, all three phases. It's special teams, it's offense, and it's defense. Hey, if the other team gets the ball, here's a novel concept. Defense, stud up and stop them. Oh, no, our defense couldn't stop them. And now our quarterback didn't get to touch the ball. You guys are a bunch of whiners. And you know what? Your whining, your incessant whining is what created this. And I loved sudden death overtime. I thought it was the way to go. And that's on you guys. So you know what? Own it. And just know that sometimes games are going to end in a tie. It doesn't happen very often, but it sucks that it did. I mean, it stinks.
Yeah, Mark, I wanted to hop in and get back to the Giants here and ask you about Cam Scataboo, who kind of got just into the situation because of the injury to Tyrone Tracy. And it was supposed to be like a 1A, 1B thing, but he's been receiving a bulk of the carries ever since that injury to Tracy, former fourth round pick out of Arizona State. And Mike and I had talked about him in the pre-draft process, and everyone kind of got on his radar as soon as that playoff matchup against Texas happened. But he really had an awesome final season with the Sun Devils. He ends up going on day three, which was a little bit of a slide for him because a lot of people figured that he was a top five running back and a very, very talented running back class this past year. He's just a bulldozer, man. He runs with so much passion, and he's very fun to watch. But I just want to get your early kind of evaluation of what you've seen from Cam Scataboo ever since he's really kind of become the Giants RB1.
I think he's been awesome. And, you know, it just goes to show you what a farce the combine is. And, you know, the thing I hate about NFL personnel people and executives is they are cowards. And they're so worried about checking boxes. They're so worried about 40 times and vertical jumps and, you know, the size of your hands. And, you know, what do we hear coming out of the draft with the left tackle of the Patriots, Campbell? What do we hear? Oh, is
short arms.
Short. Yeah, who gives a rip? Can he play? Yeah. I mean, he comes off the ball the first play of the game last weekend against Carolina and just absolutely shortens somebody's neck. Like, he's a football player. And you can see whether a guy's a football player or not. And you knew that about Cam Scataboo. But, you know, you get scared and you don't want to be the executive. It takes a guy before, you know, we put him at this number. He's the third rounder or fourth rounder. And ultimately, all he does is, every time you watch him in college, all he did was play. All he did was run people over. All he did was catch the ball. All he did was be productive. But, you know, we've got a bunch of cowards that'll be like, well, he didn't run quite a fast enough 40. And I just think it's so silly. Like, if you can run a really fast 40, you know, that makes you fast. If you can bench press 225 a bunch of times, you know what? That makes you a good bench presser. It has no, it doesn't have any impact or bearing. Like, do yourself a favor. Anybody listening right now, go look up the 10 top, the 10 top bench press numbers of all time. And I'll show you 10 guys who aren't worth a squirt of piss in the National Football League.
And a lot of those guys are one and done. They play a year or two out the league.
Absolutely. But they're impressive in the weight room. You know what we used to call those guys? First off the bus guys. Yeah. Send them first off the bus, right? Intimidate everybody. Put them in a tight T-shirt and a pair of shorts. You know, make it like, oh, my God, look how big and thick that guy is. But then don't put him in the game because he can't play. Send him first off the bus, but don't put him in the game. And, you know, and that's what, like, a lot of times that's what the NFL Combine is to me. And I just think it's, I think it's silly. And part of me just thinks it's sad that we, that that's what we do.
Mark, it's crazy. You do work out in Philadelphia and you hear all these people complaining about the offense that the Eagles run now. I've seen this now three straight years. What you complain about? You went to a couple Super Bowls. You win one with it. And, you know, it's all about winning. But then late in the game, you know, Baker Mayfield's got a shot here late, okay? He throws one interception. Man, then he gets run over on one play. He's trying to throw the football, and the Eagles are all over him in that particular spot. But what the Eagles do, I guess people would say it's old school football. You know what it is? It's wins. I don't see what's all this furor about with, oh, well, they got to throw the ball more to A.J. Brown. You don't hear Devontae Smith complain about it. It's about, isn't this a bottom line business of winning? This is a lot having to do with fantasy football for a lot of people.
Yeah, you know, I say it all the time, wide receivers, like, they're just, they're like children. They're totally dependent on the other 10 guys doing their job. And you know, if they're not fed, they whine and cry and piss and moan all the time. So, you know, there's an overvalue in the league, and it's fantasy football, about what wide receivers actually do. And listen, man, I love a dude that, you know, that is always open and all that kind of stuff. But the bottom line is, man, like, to really win in this league, look at Cincinnati. I mean, they load up on wide receivers. They've got two of the best in the business. You know, you put those two, Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins, against any two in the league. How good are they? They can't block anybody. I mean, you know, you can put wide receivers. You might as well corner the market. Get every wide receiver. Hey, trade A.J. Brown to Cincinnati, right? Ultimately, you know what you're going to win? Nothing. You're not going to win anything because you can't keep your quarterback upright. And you look at Cincinnati, like, what, you talk about a waste, just wasting Joe Burrow, who's one, in my opinion, I think he's the best quarterback in football. And you're just wasting. The guy's hurt all the time. You make him sit in shotgun 96% of the time. And teams just tee off on the guy. And, you know, the last 2 years, they haven't made the playoffs. They're not going to make the playoffs this year. Joe Burrow's sitting out. He's had multiple injuries because you don't protect him. It's just, what a clown show. Just a clown show. So understand how a football team that wins is built. And if you're built that way and you're a wide receiver, quit crying, because winning is what you're supposed to be there for.
Mark, always love to have you on. I know one thing. I don't have to ask you but one question. You give a good opinion. Sometimes I got to have people on here, you know, for 30 minutes. They don't give me a good opinion. You do it in about 2 minutes. Man, love to have you on, brother.
Thank you, man. You guys be well, all right?
Thanks, Mark.
All righty. That was Odyssey, NFL Insider Mark Slareff, host of the Stinkin' Truth podcast. Insider calls are brought to you by Nationwide for your insurance and financial needs. Nationwide is on your side. Mark is the host of the Odyssey original, the Stinkin' Truth podcast. Remember to listen to the Stinkin' Truth podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. We come back, our triple option feature, right here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL, Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long, joined by Steve Geller. It's our triple option feature. Tell everybody, the Yankees with a 1-0 lead over Boston in the third inning. Guys, everywhere I go today, I hear it. Can the Tigers get a running game? And my thing about it is, they haven't gotten it by now. You expect this to all of a sudden change? It's not. LSU is really soft up front. along the offensive line. They're not a real physical football team along the offensive line. It was the biggest concern coming into the season. It's the biggest concern today. I get it. Garrett Nussmeier, no matter what they say, he's nursing an injury. You watch him throw the football, he's got nothing behind that throw, nothing behind it. But their offensive line can't move anybody off the line of scrimmage. And, man, you got to be able to run the football to keep defenses honest. And it is a major, major concern for LSU because now, you know, yeah, you can beat maybe South Carolina without rushing for 150 yards. But when you take on teams like Alabama and Texas A&M in the future, along with an Oklahoma down the road, you got to be able to run the football. And first of all, they point their finger at the running back. Oh, it's the running back's fault. Well, it's not the running back's fault. Offensive line. What masked everything for 2 years was one dude, Jaden Daniels. His ability to get up the field, and he scared the bejesus out of you every time he took off running, masked the fact that what was supposed to be the Brian Kelly strength, and he did it at Notre Dame, running the football, physical brand up front. Have we seen any of that at LSU? Other than maybe, you know, occasionally you might see a little bit of it. It's a major concern for this LSU football team as we enter kind of that second phase of the season. But, guys, if you think all of a sudden this is going to kind of appear and that they can become a physical running team, if you think an off week is going to schedule it out and we're going to get everything straight, it won't. I think LSU, they are who they are. They're a pass-happy team. They throw a lot of little short passes. Hopefully you can get Nussmeier healthy. They're trying to win with their defense and special teams also. But if you think all of a sudden this team can consistently run for 130, 170 yards a game, ain't happening.
Mike, I got some numbers to build on that. Our friend Blake Ruffino over at Are You Serious Sports put this together, kind of compiled the package of different numbers from NCAA.com as far as LSU's offensive totals. We'll start with the rushing offense, 119th out of 134 FBS teams, guys, at 104.8 yards per game. Passing offense, 44th. Total offense, 88th. Scoring offense, tied for 79th. Third down offense, tied for 59th. Red zone offense tied for 77th, and the best number of all of them, the first down offense, tied for 27th. This team has a problem. There's no sugarcoating it anymore. They were able to win those first four games with defense and, you know, the question about the talent level of some of the teams that you're going against and where is Clemson right now, where is Florida right now. You go up against a legit top 15 squad, which has now jumped into the top five with this Ole Miss team, and it was exposed. There's no sugarcoating it at all, guys. This LSU team has problems on offense. And like you mentioned, Mike, it's not likely that they're going to fix all of them in just one bye week.
No, that don't happen that way. So that lack of physicality. Last year, I'll ask both of you, were they a good running team last year?
No.
They were maybe average at best. They had four guys go in the NFL draft. Right. And one of them was a top five pick with Will Campbell. You couldn't run the ball consistently last year. What makes you think now, with five new pieces across the board, that all of a sudden was going to change? I don't know if it's coaching, scheme, whatever. This team does not resemble what Brian Kelly had at Notre Dame at all in their inability to consistently run the football.
And Steve? Before you go real quick, I want to ask you, Mike, you had brought it up last night. The Garrett Nussmeier injury situation, I think, is being maybe underreported and undersold by Coach Kelly. I'm not going to go as far to say that he's been gaslighting people or anything like that, but he says that Nussmeier suffered a torso injury during fall camp and that he's going to be good by the bye week, right? Guys, you know, if he had shown some strides in the Southeastern game, all of that went in the garbage bin against Ole Miss. He did not look close to 100%. Mikey had brought it up last night on the second guest show. He didn't have the zip on his passes. He didn't have anything behind the deep balls. Every single time he uncorked a deep ball, it felt like it was well underthrown just because he doesn't have anything behind it. So I think maybe this torso injury that Coach Kelly has brought up it's a little bit more severe than just being let on.
Tolly, I hate to break it to you, but sometimes coaches lie.
That's a fact.
Okay, you know, they maybe don't give you the whole truth with it. And I think, you know, Garrett's trying to fight through this, whatever type of injury he has with his upper torso. But you can tell he's short on all his longer throws and his nose diving. And so that tells me he's got nothing behind it. After the second throw, Herb Tyler and I, who we do the pregame with, and Herb's a former quarterback, we both texted each other at the same time. Man, he don't look right. Something's wrong because his passes are coming up short, and he's got no, like, arm strength behind that at all. So, I mean, I get it. And if I'm a head coach, I don't need to tell you a damn thing. I don't need to tell the media fans nothing. You know, I keep that to myself. But it's obvious at this stage that there is a health issue with Garrett Nussmeier, and it showed up big against Ole Miss. Steve?
Mike, you had brought up just now about the offensive line of the LSU Tigers last year. Will Campbell, he's a part of what I'm talking about here for triple option. Looking at 33rd team, they put out the lowest pressure rates allowed by rookie O linemen in week four. What do you know? Number one, Mark Schlereth made a joke about it with those short arms. Will Campbell leading the way with the rookies in week four offensive linemen, least amount of pressures. Number two, what do you know? The guy that filled in for an injured Cesar Ruiz and Torricelli Simpkins. Definitely a huge positive for the Saints going forward now. It looks like Ruiz is going to miss some time with that ankle issue, 4 to 6 weeks possibly. With Simpkins, I'm imagining he's going to step up into that starting role, especially when you're looking at low pressure rate against the, you know, with playing against the Buffalo Bills and going into this matchup. Man, oh man, we know that the New York Giants front is going to be difficult to deal with for sure.
That's a toughie. But run the football. Don't let them pin their ears back and take off after you and play sick'em ball. Because that's what happened late against the Bills.
Right.
The Bills, okay, they had a two-score lead. They play sick'em ball. Bosa, sick'em. Espinier, sick'em. Russo, sick'em. That's what they want to do you. What you got to do is wear them out. Run the football. Wear them down, and then go over the top with them. Now, that ain't great for fantasy football and for people who constantly want to see you throw the football over the top. But it should win for you, especially against a team like the Giants. I still don't get what Harbaugh and the Chargers were trying to do, but that's for another day. We'll be back to finish it off here in hour number two of Sports Talk right after this break. We'll be back with more Sports Talk here on the Big 870 right after this news break on the Big 870 WWL. And at 7 o'clock, the Saints Hour with Mike Hoss.